Chapter 33. Basia.
What does that mean? Basia asked.
Well, Alex said, it's complicated, but these little pellets of fuel get injected into a magnetic bottle where a bunch of lasers fire. That makes the atoms in the fuel fuse, and it releases a lot of energy.
Are you making fun of me?
No,
Alex said.
Well, maybe a little.
What exactly are you asking? If our reactor is offline, does that mean we'll crash? Is the ship broken? Is it just us? What does it mean?
Hold your horses, Alex said.
He was sitting in his pilot's chair, doing complicated things with his control panel.
Yeah,
he finally said, dragging the word out into a long sigh.
Reactors are offline on the Israel and the Barb. That's a lot worse for them than it is for us.
Falcia, my daughter is on the Barbapicola. Is she in danger?
Alex started working on the panel again, his fingers tapping out commands faster than Basia could follow. He clucked his tongue as he worked. The clucking, while Basia waited for an answer, made him want to scream and choke the laconic pilot.
Well,
Alex drawled out, then tapped one last control and a graphic display of Illus with swirling lines around it appeared.
Yeah, the Barb's orbit is decaying.
The ship is crashing?
Basia yelled at him.
Wouldn't say crashing, but we've all been keeping pretty low with bringing up ore and all. Most times adding a little velocity's just the way you do it, but...
We have to go get her.
Ease down, let me finish,
Alex yelled back, patting the air in a placating gesture that made Basia want to punch him in his face.
The orbit's always decaying, but it won't be dangerous for days, maybe longer, depending on how long they can run the maneuvering thrusters on battery power. Felsia's not in any danger, right now.
Let's go get her,
Basia said, taking deep breaths to keep his words calm and level.
Can we do that? Can we go to her ship without the reactor?
Sure. The Rosie's a warship. Her battery backups are robust. We can do quite a bit of maneuvering if we need to. But with the reactor down, every bit of power we pull off those batteries is gone. It ain't getting replaced. Lose too much of it to land, and we'll be in the same position as them. We're not doing anything until we make a plan, so calm down, or I'll lock you in your cabin.
Basia nodded, but didn't trust himself to speak around the rising panic in his chest. His daughter was on a spaceship that was falling out of the sky. He might never be calm again.
On top of which, Alex continued, you think everyone else on the Barb is just going to be okay with us leaving without them? We don't have room for everyone on that ship. Docking with a ship full of frightened people looking to get off is never plan A.
Basia nodded again.
But if we don't get a plan?
He said. Alex's grin went away.
We'll get your girl. If it comes to that, if we all fall out of the sky, your daughter will be on this ship when it happens. So will Naomi.
Basia's panic and anger was replaced by a feeling of shame and a sudden lump in his throat.
Thank you.
It's family,
Alex said with a smile that was almost only baring his teeth.
We don't let our family down.
Basia drifted through the Rocinante like a ghost. Alex was in engineering, tinkering with the reactor, trying to figure out what was causing the failure. Basia had offered to help, but Alex had declined. He couldn't blame the pilot. His ignorance of nuclear engineering and ship's systems was utter and complete. He doubted the reactor failing to work could be fixed by a really clean bead of weld. If it turned out he was wrong, Alex would call. In the meantime, Basia moved through the ship, trying to distract himself from the idea that he was slowly drifting toward the planet and a fiery death. That Felsia was, too. He went to the galley and made a sandwich that he didn't eat. He went to the head and bathed with damp scrubbing pads and rub-on cleansers. He left with a few friction burns and all the same worries he'd brought in with him. For the first time since coming to the Rocinante, he actually felt like a prisoner. Alex had left a panel on the ops deck monitoring the other two ships. Basia could check on the Barbapiccola as often as he liked. The pilot seemed to think that the display showing hundreds of hours before the Barb's orbit decayed enough to be dangerous would make him feel better. But Alex didn't understand. It didn't matter how long that number was. What mattered was that it was counting down. Every time Basia looked at the counter, there was less time than when he'd looked before. When he was looking at a countdown timer for the death of his child, the numbers on it were almost meaningless. He avoided looking. He returned to the galley and cleaned up the mess his sandwich preparations had made. He threw his used scrubbing pads and towels into the bin and then went ahead and ran a cycle of laundry to clean them. He watched a children's cartoon and then one of Alex's noir films. Afterward, he couldn't remember either. He wrote a letter to Jacek and then deleted it, recorded a video apology to Lucia. When he watched it, he looked like a madman, with hair flying wildly out from his skull and sunken, haunted eyes. He deleted it. He returned to Ops, telling himself that he would just double-check that nothing had changed, that the inexorable ticking of his daughter's death clock was just data to be monitored. He watched the tiny icon that represented the Barbapiccola travel its glowing path around Illus, every passage taking it an imperceptible increment closer to the atmosphere that would kill it. Just data, no change. Just data. Tick, tick, tick.
"Alex, Holden here," a voice blared from the communications console.
Basia floated to the panel and turned on the microphone.
"Hello, this is Basia Merton,"
he said, surprised at how calm his voice sounded. Holden was calling. Holden worked for the governments of Earth and the OPA. He'd know what to do.
Hi. Alex left me a message, but comms have been really spotty. He around?
Basia laughed in spite of himself.
I could probably find him. Great, I'll... "Hey, Captain,"
Alex said. He sounded out of breath.
"Sorry, took a sec to get to the panel. I was elbows deep in the Rossi's nethers when you called."
Basia reached out to turn off his speaker and let them talk, but stopped with his finger hovering millimeters over the control. This was James Holden on the line. He was probably going to be talking to Alex about the reactor shutdowns. Feeling a little like a peeping Tom, Basia left the connection on.
"There a problem?"
Holden asked.
"Yeah, so fusion don't work no more,"
Alex said, exaggerating his drawl.
"If that's the punchline, I don't get it." "Wasn't a joke. Just yanked the reactor apart. Injector works, fuel pellets drop, laser array fires, magnetic bottle is stable. All the parts that make it a fusion reactor work just fine, only, you know, without the fusing."
"God damn it," Holden said. Even Basia, who'd only just met the man, could hear the frustration in his voice.
"Is it just us?"
"Nope,"
Alex said.
"We're all flying on batteries up here."
"How long?"
"Well, even on batteries, I can put the Rossi up far enough, we'll all die of old age before she falls down. Or I can slope on down planetside and park. The Israel's got maybe 10 days or so, depending on how much juice she stores. But she's also got a ton of people sucking up air, so she'll be burning through her batteries just keeping everyone warm and breathing. The Barb's worse off than that. Same problems, shittier boat."
Basia's gut clenched at this casual description of his daughter's peril, but kept silent. Our creepy friend said there was a defense grid, Holden said. Their power station blew up, so the old defenses are in lockdown.
They do seem to dislike big energy sources near their stuff, Alex replied.
Basia had the sense they were talking about something from their past, but didn't know what it was.
And we heard the supply drop was shot down, Holden said. So we've got a few hundred people down here, a bunch more up there, and we're all about to die because the planet's defenses won't let us help each other.
The Rossi's got the juice to land, if you need us, Alex said.
Basia wanted to scream at him.
We can't land! My daughter's still up here!
They shot the shuttle down, Holden said. Do not risk my ship.
If we can't get supplies down to you, me and Naomi will be inheriting it pretty soon.
And until that happens, do what I tell you to do, Holden said.
The words were harsh, but there was affection in them.
Roger that, Alex said.
He didn't sound offended.
You know, Holden continued, we've got what seems like an engineering problem, and the best engineer in this solar system is locked up on that other ship. Why don't you call them and point that out?
I'll do that, Alex replied.
I'll see if there's anything we can do from this end.
Miller,
Alex said. Basia had no idea what that meant.
Yeah,
Holden said.
You take care of yourself down there.
Affirmative. You take care of my ship. Holden out.
Look,
Alex said, not quite yelling.
I've run the damn numbers. You're going down. It might take 2 weeks if you're lucky, but that ship is going to be scraping atmosphere and catching on fire.
Heard you the first time,
the face on the other end said. A man named Havelock. Alex had called him after the conversation with Holden. He'd stopped off on his way up from the engine room to don a fresh uniform and comb his thinning black hair. He looked very official. It didn't seem to impress Havelock very much.
So stop dicking me around and turn Nagata loose to help us figure this shit out, Alex said.
And that's where you lose me, Havelock replied with a tight smile.
He was a compact, pale-skinned man with a military-style haircut. He radiated the self-assured physical competence carried by soldiers and professional security people. To Basia, a belter who'd lived under the thumbs of two different interplanet governments, it said, I know how to beat people up. Don't make me show you.
I don't see how, Alex started.
Yes, Havelock interrupted him. We're all going to crash if we can't get the reactors back online. I agree. What I don't get is how me releasing my prisoner fixes that.
Because,
Alex said, visibly gulping as he bit the word off.
Exo Nagata is the best engineer there is. If someone is going to figure this problem out and save all of our asses, it's probably going to be her. So stop keeping the potential solution to our problem locked in your jail!
He smiled at the camera and turned off the microphone before adding,
You pig-headed idiot!
I think maybe you're underestimating my engineering team, Havelock replied, still with his smug smile. But I hear what you're saying. Let me see what I can do.
Gee, that would be great, Alex said.
He somehow managed to make it sound sincere. He turned off the comm station.
You smug sack of flaming pig shit.
What do we do now?
Basia asked.
The hardest thing of all, we wait.
Basia floated in a crash couch on the ops deck. His mind drifted from a fitful half-sleep to groggy wakefulness and back again. A few workstations away, Alex was fiddling with the controls and muttering to himself. As he drifted, sometimes Basia was on the Rocinante, his mind worrying over the missing rumble of the fusion reactor, like a tongue searching the gap left by a lost tooth. And then, without transition, he'd be drifting down the icy corridors of his lost home on Ganymede. Sometimes they were the peaceful tunnels and domes that had been his family's home for so many years. Other times, they were filled with rubble and corpses, the way they'd been when Bassia had fled. The long flight on the Barba Piccola afterward had been hellish. The endless days trapped in a cabin barely large enough for one person, but housing two full families. The growing sense of despair as port after port after port turned them away. No one needing a ship full of refugees flooding their docks in the middle of what looked like the solar system's first all-out war. Bassia had drifted through that like a ghost as well. He'd thought he was saving his family when he put them on the ship, but he'd left a dying son behind and trapped the rest of them on a leaky old cargo ship with nowhere to go. That moment, when the captain of the Barba Piccola had called them all together and told them about the rings and the worlds on the other side, had felt like a revelation. When he'd asked if any of them wanted to try and take one of the new worlds, make a home there, not one voice had been raised in dissent. Even just the word home made it impossible to argue. So they'd flown through the gate, past the confused and disorganized ships around it and in the hub, and come out on the other side into the Illus system. They'd found a world with oxygen and water, a muddy brown and blue ball from orbit, but so beautiful once they'd landed that people lay on the ground and wept. The months that followed were brutal. The painful medication and exercise to get their bodies used to the heavy gravity. The slow building of the dwellings, the desperate attempts to grow some, any, food in the scraps of soil they'd brought down from the barb, the discovery of the rich lithium veins, and the realization that they might have something to sell and become self-sustaining, followed by the back-breaking labor to pull the ore from the ground with primitive tools. All worth it, though. A home.